Let's discuss Harvard Business School and its 2 plus 2 program with a 2 plus 2 grad and Baker Scholar. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this week's Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down and exclaim to the people staring at you, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Now, before we talk to today's guest and learn more about HBS's 2 plus 2 program and its admissions policies, I have a quick reminder. If you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at accepted.com/138. You can leave a comment with your question. You can also send me questions via email by sending them to questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. We're developing a wonderfully supportive and thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to post that question or comment. A couple of things about the show that are a little different than normal. One, as you can probably hear, I have a cold. I'm sorry if my voice is a little off. And two, we posted the show a day late this week because, thanks to Winter Storm Jonas, I got stuck in Washington, D.C. And I was actually on a plane coming home, rerouted, when I was originally supposed to interview today's guest. He graciously agreed to postpone the interview, but we couldn't get it up until Thursday instead of our usual Wednesday. Hopefully, all will be back to normal by Wednesday of next week. Our guest today is Adam Nathan, who earned his MBA from Harvard Business School in 2015 as a Baker Scholar and joined Accepted a few months ago. Adam graduated from Duke in 2010 and was accepted to the inaugural 2 plus 2 class at Harvard Business School. Before starting at HBS, he worked briefly for the White House and then as an associate and senior associate consultant for the Bridgespan Group, the nonprofit associated with Bain Consulting. And finally, he worked in network strategy for Hawaiian Airlines. While at Harvard, he started ACE Travel and will discuss admissions and entrepreneurship at Harvard Business School during Admission Straight Talk today. Adam, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks so much, Linda.
Pleasure having you on. Now, you attended Duke as an undergrad. How did you decide to apply to Harvard 2 plus 2?
It's actually a bit of a funny story. I saw the initial ad for 2 plus 2 on the side of my web browser when I was interning the summer of before my senior year in Washington, D.C. I was working for Colin Powell's education nonprofit. And I remember the ad had a red share, and it said, "Do you want to be in it?" I didn't really know at the time what business school was, but when I went to the HBS website, what compelled me was really the idea of leadership. Before applying to HBS, I never really thought about going into business at all. I was very much interested in social issues, and I thought I'd spend my career in the nonprofit space. But I think what HBS represents is the idea of applying leadership and management to problems, whether they're in the private sector, the public sector, or the nonprofit sector. And so I thought that there might be a place for me at HBS, and that's why I applied.
So did your goals change along the way at HBS? Are you still interested in not-for-profit?
Yeah, I mean, I guess disagree with the notion that Milton Friedman coined that the only purpose of business is to create shareholder value. I think businesses are an incredibly important tool in not just creating profit, but also stimulating and catalyzing change of all kinds. You know, businesses create tremendous value, not just financially, but also through employing people, through their impact on communities and the environment and local institutions. And so, if anything, going to HBS has strengthened the idea that I think that businesses and more generally the private sector are a great tool for making the world more as we want it to be.
Now, when you were, I assume when you finally did apply to Harvard, you were a senior at Duke, right? Did you know at that point you were going to intern at the White House, or did you have any idea? I guess you said you wanted to go into leadership roles and use that information to solve social issues. But were you just attracted to Harvard for its brand, or were there specific aspects of its program that attracted you, or was it just the idea of leadership that you mentioned a minute ago?
Yeah, you know, to be honest, I don't think I knew when I applied how valuable a brand HBS really was. Mm-hmm. I only started to get that sense in the years after I graduated Duke when I went into the working world and saw a lot of my older peers sweating the application process at places like HBS and its peer schools. Mm-hmm. I certainly knew what Harvard meant and that it was a good place, but I had no idea really the kind of reputation HBS had or why people went and what they got out of the experience. And so I think at the time I was applying because it seemed like a great opportunity, but in retrospect, there's so much about the school to be lauded, and it really is worth its gold in its reputation.
Right. Is it as good as it seems from the outside looking in, or better? And what makes it better?
Yeah, I think it's better, if that's even possible. I know HBS has a great reputation, and there are certainly many other great schools out there. You don't have to go to HBS to get, you know, a great MBA education and experience. But I think what's unique about HBS is, as a student at least, the whole experience applies the same principles of management, those best practices you're learning in the classroom, to the experience itself. Mm-hmm. And so HBS is extremely intentional about every aspect of the student experience, from the work in classroom to the experiences you have outside the classroom and around the world, to the way that you socialize and create a community with your peers in your section. I think one of the highlights of HBS, when looking back on it now, are the professors. And they're not just brilliant professors worthy of Harvard, but they're also amazing facilitators and educators. And HBS doesn't just hire people who want to do research. They hire people who have a passion about teaching and helping other people learn. And if you've ever gone to the HBS website, I'm talking to the world out there, you'll know that the HBS classroom is distinctive and that it has 90 seats that are structured like an amphitheater. Mm-hmm. And the professor's job is to sort of be a conductor of this orchestra. Nobody talks more than once in a class, and the professor somehow has to weave insights through comments that people make that he or she has no idea are coming. And so professors really are, I think, a hallmark of the distinctive way HBS teaches business education. I think another thing that a lot of people regard about HBS is the case method, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a really great way to understand how theories and ideas and practices actually bear out in real life situations. And the way cases are written, it puts the student, you, in the shoes of the protagonist. And you have to evaluate which way to go with often a very short and incomplete set of information and some level of uncertainty and urgency. You know, you have to make a decision before you walk into the classroom and you might get cold called for your perspective. And so the case method, I think, is another thing that makes HBS even better when you're actually experiencing it versus just reading about it on the website. I think the last thing that I mentioned is just the people. Everyone at HBS is of course very accomplished and smart and full of potential. But I think the thing that I didn't realize going in was just how nice everybody would be. And I think the admissions process really does screen for people who are good people, who have a strong ethical compass and a strong moral orientation. And, you know, it's just working out in the world, I know that that's not true of 100% of the people that I've come in contact with. And so it's certainly great to be at a place where I think people really want to do right by others.
Yeah, that is a wonderful, wonderful place to be. I mean, looking at our clients that have gotten in to HBS, I would be inclined to agree with you. Almost, I can think of possibly one exception in 20 years where I was thinking, yeah, I don't know about this guy. And that was many years ago. I also know that some of the people who have gone to HBS are really just sterling characters, very impressive people. What do you miss from your time there?
I miss the time off. I mean, to be serious, though, it is a real privilege to have a period in your career where you don't have to work and where you can take some time to think about what you really want to do with your life, where you want to be, what kind of impact you want to make, the kind of person that you want other people to know you as. You know, those are serious big questions, and it's helpful, you know, 3 to 5 years into your career to basically have a 2-year period of time that employers give you a break for. You know, they don't count it against you to travel and to relax and to read and to think and to talk and to learn for learning's sake. I think at least for me in undergrad, I did a lot of things because I was thinking about where they would take me next. And I think a lot of people make decisions on that basis early on in their career and even, you know, even before college.
Right.
And I think one of the great things about HBS or schools like it, business school in general really, is that you really have made it by that point. You know, you're set for the rest of your career. You're definitely not going to fail despite how anxious some people still are about failing at business school and beyond. And so I think what I miss from HBS is just that moment in time to take a step back from being, you know, in the middle of the dance floor of life and work, always thinking about my next tactical move, to be more strategic and to absorb the richness of the people and the things and the ideas around me.
I think that that's actually one of the sadder aspects of our work, really, is that you meet these young people and they are basically on a treadmill. There's no sense of, oh, I want to explore. It's I want to do A in order to do B in order to do C in order to do D. And that's how it's been for most of their adolescence and maybe even childhood. I'm not saying you can't plan ahead, but there's something lost, I think, particularly for young adults or teens. If there's no sense of, I just want to, actually, I think more for teens, if there's no sense of, I just want to explore some interests as opposed to just, I've got to do this to get into college, to get into grad school, to, you know, that to get a good job, to, you know, live on a certain street. I think that's something that can be improved in general in our society. What would you like to see changed or improved at Harvard?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think going off that theme, my observation from my time at HBS and now working with you, helping applicants get into places like HBS, is that a lot of people have been doing things because making big decisions in their life, whether it's where they work or where they live or the people that they associate with, based on what they think others value. And I think even at HBS, a lot of people still haven't figured out or developed a true sense of who they want to be when they grow up and what unique value they add to the world and what they want to be known for, not just on their resume, but by the people around them, you know, for who they are, not just what they do or how much money they make or what position they're at a certain company. And I think it's okay if you haven't developed a sense of who you want to be. I certainly haven't. but, you know, I sometimes worry that HBS doesn't push people enough to develop that. As, you know, as I said before, I think those 2 years offer a true privilege, and they're a time really to accelerate your own growth and learning, and to focus on questions that might make you a little bit more uncomfortable that you'll avoid in the day-to-day stresses of working somewhere, you know, 9 to 8 p.m. or whatever your hours are. And so I think one thing I'd love to see changed about HBS is more of a focus on helping students develop their sense of purpose. Who they want to be, what they want to do, and I think correspondingly how they're going to help other people. I think HBS is probably one of the richest institutions in the world in all senses of the word. Right. And everyone who goes there, including me, is extremely privileged to have that opportunity. And I think sometimes, and this is probably isn't endemic to HBS, but it's more something generational or just a sign of the times. But a lot of people spend a lot of time, even my friends and myself, looking inward, you know, me, all the time. And sometimes I didn't see the same sense of responsibility or an orientation towards others that I guess I would want or expect from people who will have immense influence and power in their future careers and lives. And it's no shame to do well for yourself and for your family. Those are worthy goals, but I think that while they are necessary, they're not sufficient, especially for people who go to places like HBS. This is my personal opinion here, I should say.
No, I'm asking you for it.
it's sort of assured that if you go to HBS and you don't break the law, you're going to do pretty well in life. And so if that's your baseline, I think the questions that anyone who goes to HBS should be asking themselves is what can we do on behalf of others beyond ourselves? You know, what's our responsibility to leave the world better than we found it? And I think people sometimes are thinking that, but maybe it's lower on that priority list or a quieter conversation than what am I going to do after business school, or how am I going to find the perfect spouse, or how am I going to pay off my student loans? All important things, but things that I don't think add up to a truly fulfilling life over the long term.
Right. I mean, I can hear that. What would you want Harvard to do to help students kind of take that time and pursue those questions? By the way, I got to tell you, from my perspective, I would say they're lifelong questions.
Yeah, of course, of course. I think, you know, if you talk to students at HBS, they would tell you that that internal orientation starts way before people get to HBS, right? It starts with focusing on resume virtues from your freshman year of high school, or even before that, probably now in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's, I don't blame HBS at all. I think people come to HBS already affected by a certain and probably narrow definition about what constitutes success or winning in life. Mm-hmm. And I think what HBS could do is try and break that notion as much as possible. And I think it takes a holistic rethinking of the entire experience. And I think one big area where they get started is admissions. I think they've made tremendous strides in innovating on the application process over the years.
Great.
And I think this year's essay to introduce yourself to your classmates is sort of a prod in the right direction in that it forces applicants to talk about themselves as people, not as lines on a resume. And in the end, that is truly how you come across in your HBS experience with your checksmates. They don't care where you went to work or what you did there, or how you grew revenues by X percent.
Well, they
care
might
about
care
who you are and what you're interested in.
They might care very much about what you did, but that's discussed elsewhere in the application. I mean, you have the whole job history.
Yeah, I mean,
to say where you did the work.
Yeah, but what I meant by that was the people that you sit in the classroom with every day for 2 years, and then probably the people who you'll work with after that in your future companies or organizations, care less about what you did in the past and how you craft your story on your resume, but more who you are and values that you that you hold dear, the things that you'll push for, how you'll make difficult trade-offs between important things. I think the admissions process is at HBS and other schools is fully evolving in this direction of having students talk about themselves as real people rather than just as the sum of their accomplishments, because people are more than the sum of what's on their resume.
For sure. Now, there are rumors that you need a lot of money for the social life and the extracurriculars at Harvard Business School, and that, frankly, it's elitist. Have you found that to be true? Do you feel that characterization is valid?
I think that's a good question. I think the rule of thumb, which is more of a quip at HBS, is that you need to invest $20,000 to $30,000 on top of tuition to really get the full HBS experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much of HBS happens outside of the classroom. It happens in the trips, the international trips over summer and winter and fall break. It happens in the weekend retreats within your section and that certain clubs throw. It happens during your summer internship when you have a chance to reconvene with classmates and strengthen your relationships with them outside of the HBS walls. And all that stuff costs money. It's extremely valuable because the relationships you build at HBS, I think, do really carry on through the rest of your life. And so I think a lot of people look at the money that is required in social life and extracurricular life as an investment mm-hmm. that will return itself many times over in the years after business school. I think it's tough, though. I think a lot of people do come to HBS already financially well off. At least that was my experience. I never made more than $100,000 before business school. But I think a lot of people blew through the number way before they even got to HBS. And so I think what can be tough is for people that come from non-traditional backgrounds, like the nonprofit space or government, or maybe a big industrial company with lower salary tiers, to come into HBS and try and match the experiences of those with more resources without feeling some kind of pain. And I think, you know, talk is called straight talk. I think
mm-hmm.
people often find a way, creative ways to fund the social experience they want at HBS with the thought that after business school, they can hopefully recoup some of that, those funds, and pay off whatever debt they accumulate. So I think there's a bit of a pay-to-pay culture, but I think that's sort of table stakes.
Right. Makes sense. When you were at Harvard, when you were a student at Harvard, you were part of a multi-year student-led project and collaborated with the admissions office to improve its admissions process. Where do you see MBA admissions headed?
It's a good question. I think, as we talked a little bit about before in the conversation, MBA admissions will start to shift, will start to be the tip of the spear in pushing students away from just talking about the things on their resume, where they went to school, what their GPA was, what they got on the GMAT, which consulting firm or financial institution they worked for, to more of a sense of who they are as people. What are they passionate about? What are they curious about? What interests them? What are they scared of? What were they put on this earth to do? What values do they hold dear? Who in their life inspires them to keep going and achieving? How they think about people beyond themselves. I think at HBS specifically, one of the things, as Dee would say, probably 90% of the people that apply to HBS probably could come and do well at the school in the classroom. You know, they're smart enough, they're prepared enough, they work hard, they have all that stuff down. But of course, they don't. HBS doesn't let in 90% of people, and that's because they're really looking for other qualities in individuals besides just academic achievement. That's necessary, but not sufficient. I think what HBS and I think other schools, hopefully like it, will start to look for in their evolving admissions processes are not just your resume virtues, but your human virtues. And I think HBS has been experimenting with how exactly to figure that out about people just by getting a sense of who they are on paper. The interview is very important at HBS, specifically for this reason, because admissions officers have a chance to actually get a sense of who you are.
Sure.
And I think they really don't care about anything else except, do you seem like a good person? Will you play nice with others? Do you feel like somebody with real fears and passions and aspirations rather than just some kind of robot? And I think that's how the admissions process will evolve over time. And I think there's been some news articles recently, not just about MBA programs, but also undergrad programs, and trying to get more of a sense of who these students are, these applicants are as people, in part to try and butt off some of the pressure that parents and students and guidance counselors and the whole system places on people to achieve and perhaps do things that they probably wouldn't do just to get into school X or business school Y.
Okay, thank you. A really thoughtful answer. And looking back on your 2+2 experience, you know, and here I don't just mean HBS, I mean the whole idea of applying and getting accepted your senior year, working, I guess, for 3 years, and then getting your MBA. Would you do it again? Are you glad you did it?
Absolutely. And I would encourage everybody to apply if they think it's right for them. And there's one key reason, which is that all that pressure that we were just talking about, doing things because you think they'll help you get to the next rung on the ladder rather than because you really want to, that pressure starts to dissolve when you know that you have something like HBS as a backstop 3 or 4 years into the future.
That's pretty good in your hip pocket. I mean,
yeah, it's a good insurance policy.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, to be honest, I did think about that when I was making career decisions. And I had been passionate about politics and government and public policy since I was a kid. I was, you know, reading about politics in the New York Times since at least high school, not because I had to, but because I wanted to. And so when the opportunity to go work at the White House came up after school for a salary that was below minimum wage, I was able to take it because I knew that in the future I would have something like HBS to hopefully raise my income if I wanted to. And, you know, another thing I was passionate about since I was as a kid was airlines and travel. And so after working at a nonprofit consulting firm, I made, I think, a rather unconventional choice to go from working in the nonprofit sector to working in an equally unprofitable space, which is the airline industry. And I was able to do that again. One of the reasons I made that choice, or was able to make that choice with confidence, is because I knew that even if I hated the airline industry or was extremely dysfunctional or I decided it wasn't right for me, I could always go to HBS and start over. And so and to be honest, I loved my time in the airline industry, and I loved all of the jobs I've had so far. They've been incredible growth experiences for me, and I was able to pursue them confidently without thinking twice because I knew I had HBS right there on my resume next to all the other things I was interested in.
That's fantastic. Did Harvard help you launch your startup? And can you tell us a little bit about ACE Travel and how you came to it? And where is this love of travel? How far back does it go?
Yeah, so for a bit of context, I worked at Hawaiian Airlines for 2 years before business school. And when I was at Hawaiian, I had the privilege of managing our network strategy and planning team. And when I was at Hawaiian, we grew from $500 million in revenue to $2 billion in revenue. So we doubled in size the 2 years I was there. And so it was an amazing experience to understand.
They must want you back, Adam.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It would be great to go back there and live in Hawaii again. Hawaiian is a great company and sort of a niche operator in the travel and airline space. But at the same time, it is a lot like many other bigger airlines in that it's an old company. It's the oldest airline in America. It had been through two bankruptcies before I got there, and so there was a lot of pain in its history. And there was somewhat of an aversion to change. And I think anyone who has flown recently probably knows that the experience could be better in myriad ways. And customers typically hate airlines. It's one of the most hated industries right there alongside banks and Congress. employees often don't like it, especially those on the front line that are responsible for taking care of passengers. And up until very recently, with lower fuel prices, airlines didn't make a lot of money. Airlines, people were sort of treated as a commodity, sort of like gasoline. So long as it gets you from A to B, you'll go for the cheapest product without really thinking about brand or experience. And so, you know, in economics language, the airline industry, in my opinion, is nowhere close to the productivity frontier because it just could be better in lots of different ways without really trading off, you know, customer satisfaction for employee satisfaction, for example. And so when I got to HBS, I just thought there has to be a better way to build this business. There must be a way to design a better business model than what we have today for the airline industry. And so I started a research project with the support of some very senior professors at HBS and MIT to build a better business model for the airline industry. And what came out of it was this company that I'm working on now called ACE Travel. And the idea of ACE is to build really an end-to-end platform for people to book their entire vacation experiences. We focus specifically on markets, overseas markets like China and Brazil, visitors coming to the United States, to big iconic destinations like Las Vegas or Orlando, where price is important, but it's not everything, because for a lot of these people, the vacations that they're taking are once-in-a-lifetime trips, and they care about the experience, and in fact, they're willing to pay for a better experience. And so essentially our insight was that what people really want is an end-to-end travel experience that is beautiful and seamless and integrated. You know, it's sort of, I worked at Apple during the summer between my two business school years, and I was working on the iPhone. And as you know, there's other alternatives to the iPhone out there in the market. There's in fact, more Android devices than Apple devices on the market. But basically, Apple makes all the profit from the cell phone industry. And it's not because your Apple device does anything different functionally than your Android device. They both make phone calls, you can text. It's just that one is a much better experience. And so people pay a premium for that brand, for the customer service, for the seamless integration of the functionality. And the travel industry basically lacks an Apple-like product. And so we focus on a specific niche, which are overseas mass affluent customers coming to the U.S. For big vacations, where we think people actually do pay a premium. And so we actually have, we started the company basically by doing what we would call prototype tests with customers with some very generous funding from HBS. HBS and some professors actually funded our seed round for the company. But even before that, HBS gave us basically an experimentation fund of $15,000.
Really?
And through that we were able to, yeah. So we were able to get credit and get resources to build a minimum viable product for the business and actually put it out in the market. We spent time in Las Vegas, which is one of our core markets, shadowing customers on the strip within our target customer segment, talking to all of the big hotels and activity providers out there to understand how they would react to this kind of travel planning platform, design a business model where we built out full financial projections to get us ready for fundraising. And I think without the support from HBS, not just the financial support, but wisdom from professors, consultation from the amazing network of HBS alumni out in the field who work in the airline and travel and hospitality sectors, who gave us, you know, amazing advice to help us leapfrog our business model above everybody else's way earlier in our process, we probably wouldn't be where we are now. I think it's only because I went to HBS that we're able to have success. They're the kind of success we've seen so far with our business. this early in the game.
So HBS actually gave you a small sum that allowed you to, I guess, do your initial research. And then have you had like angel investors or are you bootstrapping it
So
HBS help you get the funding?
Really, really all of the above. Another generous financial program HBS has is a loan forgiveness program for both first-time entrepreneurs as well as people going into the nonprofit and government space. And so HBS actually put a pretty significant sum of money towards my own student debt from the MBA program so that I was able to focus with the remaining resources I had personally on building the business.
Wow.
Some of our closest mentors and advisors who are HBS faculty members who basically sponsored some of our research we did at HBS, which we got class credit for, became our seed investors. And a lot of them have been executives in the airline and hospitality spaces. And so having their names as the first people who put their own personal money into our business was a really great way to continue to attract other kinds of capital from larger institutional investors. And so we would not be able to be where we are today without all the ways HBS has helped us, both institutionally and by individuals across the network.
That's pretty impressive. In your opinion, having been a successful applicant and having attended HBS and now working as an admissions consultant for Accepted, what is the secret sauce for success in applying to Harvard Business School?
It's a good question, and I tell this to everyone I work with. And if you've been listening this far, you probably will hear themes of this, and you've probably already heard themes of this in my other answers. But my top advice is just be true to who you are. If you do what you think will make admissions officers like you and accept you into their program, the more you'll blend in to the crowd because you'll look like everybody else who's employing that same strategy. And I think, you know, I've read through 100 applications to this point. Linda and the other consultants have probably read through thousands collectively. You can sort of tell, I think, you can sort of see the difference between someone who is authentically representing their interests and desires and motivations and aspirations and somebody who isn't.
Who's parroting what they think.
You can definitely tell when you can tell when somebody's not.
Yeah.
It comes through in the writing.
Yeah, you usually can. You usually can. There's a certain enthusiasm when somebody's being genuine about something they genuinely care about. And there's a certain staleness when they're parroting what they think somebody they're supposed to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And the double irony is that the closer you are in your application to who you really are in life, the more I think you'll align with what HBS is really looking for in applicants. They want people with some rough edges, with interesting quirks, with untraditional values or decisions at some point in their life. That's what makes the section experience enriching for everybody else. And so the more you look different, I think, higher your chances are at a place like HBS to get in. I'm sure that anyone who's listening to this podcast, and certainly everyone we work with at Accepted, is generally qualified to go to a business school like HBS. But even if wherever you want to go, I think the closer you are in your application to who you are when an admissions officer meets you in person for an interview or your section mates and classmates meet you on your first day of school, the better you'll fare through the process.
Sounds good. And yeah, I certainly agree with you. Canned responses don't work. Of course, part of what we're dancing around here is I think people have to have thought a little bit about what they want, who they are, what's important to them, what they're really, really interested in order to be able to reflect that in an application. You can't sit down 1 minute and come up with it all. You have to have thought about it ahead of time too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true of everything I heard from classmates who applied to HBS through the regular round. I think there's an extraordinary amount of growth that can happen just from putting together your application to the business school, to a place like HBS or really any school, because it does force you to think about what you want to do with your life and how business school fits into that. And so my advice for anyone applying to HBS or really any MBA program is to take the process seriously, not just because it affects your future, but also because there's learning that you can get out of it. And I think mistakes that I see happen are when people don't give it enough time not just to perfect the essay and get the resume right, but really, as you said, Linda, to think through why they're going to business school, why a certain school is right for them, and how it fits into the broader arc of their life.
Right.
And the last advice I'd give is for people to relax. You know, it's not life and death whether or not you get into HBS or GSB or Kellogg or really any school. If you get into no business schools, you're still alive. Things will be okay. And I believe that it was probably meant to be. And so I think if it's possible at all, try to enjoy the process and see, I think, the application as a culmination of taking a step back from the day-to-day and thinking through what you really want in a life. And I think if you do it right, the thinking and the growth that can happen just by applying can be invaluable no matter what direction you go.
Great. Do you have any different advice for somebody applying to 2+2 or any specific advice for 2+2ers, or is it pretty much the same?
That's a good question. You know, I didn't know what HBS
doing well
was.
Today.
I really didn't even know. I didn't even know what business school was when I applied to 2+2. And so I think I don't think that D in the admissions committee is expecting you to. In fact, I think it's okay to state what you don't know. If you try and posture too much and pretend, then the question is, well, why are we giving you 2 or 3 years off to go into the working world at all? I think it's okay to place yourself within the perspective of the undergraduate in college that you are, rather than some sort of already tremendously accomplished business leader. You have a full career for that. And so I think for anyone applying to 2+2, just remember who you are and where you are, and know that it's okay, and that HBS is fully expecting you to have more learning and growth to do than someone who's applying in the regular process.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Any last bits of advice for Harvard Business School applicants? Any last thoughts? Anything you would have liked me to ask that I didn't ask?
I think one perspective I have now, because I didn't have an admissions consultant when I applied to school, I sort of did it on my own. And if, to be honest, I probably did it faster and dirtier than I would have liked, simply because I didn't even think I would get in. Is that having an extra pair of eyes and someone who's impartial that can help you think through your answers to essay questions, take a step back and look at how your application is fitting together as a whole. I think that's pretty invaluable. And I only have really begun to appreciate that now as a consultant myself, and also seeing other friends go through the process and hiring somebody or having somebody, whether they hire them or not, to help them put together their application. And I think it's critical that the person you ask for help is not a loved one, a family member, a boyfriend, girlfriend, a best friend, you know, somebody who cares about how you feel. And who probably has a longer-term investment in your relationship than somebody you'd hire specifically to help you with this purpose. I think it is truly helpful to have somebody who's with the experience and the wisdom and a bit broader perspective on what schools are looking for to help you craft an application that brings out the best of who you are. And I think I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably have thought about whether or not you should bring on some outside help, and I think whether it's accepted or another consulting firm or even just a colleague who can read over your application and give you some good constructive feedback, getting that outside pair of eyes, I think, can make your application a lot better.
Thank you, Adam. Well, obviously, I'm going to endorse that that advice. I think professional writers have editors for a reason, and it's a good reason. And if they have them, then presumably the people who aren't professional writers need them as much, if not more. So I'm certainly going to endorse that advice, as well as much of the advice you've given here today. This has been an outstanding interview. Thank you so much for joining me, for sharing your thoughts and your experience. Now, we're going to link to Adam's bio at exhibit.com/138. So if you enjoyed Adam's insights on life as a Harvard Business School MBA 2+2 and how to get in, you can ask to work with him on your HBS MBA or 2+2 application or any MBA application. Listener, thank you too for tuning into this, our 138th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a suggestion for you. Subscribe. That way you won't miss any future shows. You can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, Zune, or the podcast player I use, which is Overcast. And if you have a question you would like me to ask, you would like to ask me rather, or just want to comment on the show, please do so in a comment at accepted.com/138 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.